part three of our Buzz Bubble special feature with Alex Boguski at the Fearless Cottage.
Was, you know, that was one of the things that was eating at you, and I heard, I think it was at the Turning Tide conference you had mentioned. It was just, you know, there was this underlying unhappiness. Did you identify that yet, or was it, you know, is that anything you can just kind of, you know, put your finger on? And
yeah, I mean, I think that it's for a while it was difficult to understand, and I definitely was trying to, because I'm a jump out of bed, you know, can't wait to get to work.
Right, and, right.
And
Mike wasn't like that anymore.
It wasn't so much like that. It started to tail off, and for me it was. It's part of when you are an agency, you represent a lot of different voices.
Sure.
Right. So
internally, externally,
and at a certain point, it happens slowly. But at a certain point, at least I shouldn't say that this happens with everybody. But I lost my voice. I wasn't able to say what I really thought about everything, and maybe that's not important. But I had actually had that my whole career. Yeah. And a lot of what we did was behind that, I think, was that we were incredibly frank about everything. And I found that I couldn't be that voice anymore.
To distill it down, I think you weren't jumping out of bed every day is as good an answer as any. I mean,
and you want your
kids to see. We're in a business. I always say in the agency, it's like, guys, we're not digging ditches here. This is fun, you know? And when it stopped being fun, okay, so make a change.
Well, I never thought I'd do advertising. Well, I guess I never thought I would be at the same place doing the same thing my whole career. It's just, I spent so long at Crispin compared to anything else in my life.
And a lot of other people who have been in the business too.
Yeah, how many people spend that much time in one place in advertising? So, you know, not many, you know. And I always suggest to people, you may want to try it, because I don't think I did anything all that special other than, like, eventually there's no one that's been around very long, you know? And they're like, well, you should be chairman. You've been here longest.
And that's how it came down.
I think that's how it worked out. But I have a great admiration for the people that are able to stay at something a really long time. But I knew of myself years and years ago that wouldn't be me.
Right.
So I'm comfortable with that. You know, that hasn't come as a surprise to me.
Change is inevitable.
And change is good.
It's unfortunate that, you know,
change is good.
Change is good, but so many people think that when you make a change and is significant in your life and in our market, you know, in our business, that they think that there was something wrong with what you're changing from, you know, that, you know, and they tarnish that, and I have a huge problem with that. You know?
Yeah, because I think that some of the sense is, I had, this is how I say it, I had the best job in the world, right? Had so much fun, had so many cool people that I worked with, you know, it was
a lot of great brands. Jeez,
got to do lots of work.
Stop kids from smoking.
Got to change things any day. I thought, maybe we should do more of this. And you know, I could. It was a great toy that was really a lot of fun. But that doesn't mean that it has to go on forever, right? And it doesn't mean that when you make a change that it's a rejection of the other thing. It's just like advertising. I'm not trying to reject advertising, right?
Right.
I'm not trying to reject marketing. I'm a marketer for sure. You know, designer probably mostly, marketer after that. And I think that designers and marketers are cool, and I think they're good people. But one of the things that may be part of the Fast Company reaction, because a little bit of what their story was, hey, you were a marketer, so that you had no soul, and now you have to find your soul. And that's something for the industry to look at, though, right?
That goes back to the Mad Men days. I mean, if you were soulless, you know, advertisers were.
We have to.
Oh, really?
We have to continue.
Might as well be a pimp.
I don't think it's any better. I think it's just as bad. And I think realistically, we have to look at what the reaction that people have outside of marketing to marketers and what they think we are, and think about that a little
bit,
and maybe make some changes. Transparency is one of the places where we could you know, move from being the people that generate the lies about things to the people that generate the truth about things. It's fundamentally what's going to happen. It's not going to be an easy process, but every great agency is going to be helping, and every great advertising person and marketing person is going to be helping create an accurate picture of a company and a product instead of a distorted picture. That's really the opposite of what we did. Do we have the reputation for being liars because we never lied, or do we have the reputation for being liars because some of the best work told the truth and some of the worst was just absolute bullshit? Right.
So in essence, you haven't changed what you're doing at all. You're just doing it for a very different group of potential clients.
Yeah. But the industry, I think the industry has a potential to really change its image over the next 5 to 10 years.
I mean, even transparency and billing and things like that have proliferated. Now I want to know exactly what you're making. And in a lot of cases, we're like, okay, yeah,
right.
We're making a living. I'm not, you know, buying yachts on your account, but and then I'm okay.
And
no one
would begrudge that. Right. Everyone wants people to make a living. You know, one of the things that I blogged about is not advertising to kids, and I actually see that as another opportunity. Not every industry, an industry association, decides that, hey, if it makes us money, we're good with it. There can be other ways to look at it. And the industry could potentially say to the 4As or the industry organizations, like, you know what, we want to flip this. Instead of lobbying to make sure that we, you know, there are no rules around advertising to children, we'd like to flip this, and we as an industry would like to lobby towards creating some guidelines. And then what would happen? People would see, wow, this industry is actually responsible. They're actually, you know, trying to take positive steps. And it would reflect reality. Children are not the same as adults. They're not little tiny, you know, grown-ups that need to learn how to fend for themselves. They have brains that don't know how to filter advertising. They just don't. And they won't get it by practice. They get it through brain development that happens with age. After age 12, they start to, you know, you've had kids, anyone who has kids, after age 12, they start to see things more like an adult. They have the ability to look at the grays and understand that, oh, someone's trying to sell me something and get that complex relationship. Before that, you've seen this too. You watch TV with a 10-year-old or an 8-year-old, and everything that comes on, they say, I want that. I want that. And they don't kind of mean it. They,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, they totally mean it.
How much time is there toward now when I can get that?
Yeah, right. Like, not only do I want that, I need that. And did you see how happy the kids are that have that?
Yeah.
I would love to see, in Sao Paulo, they've outlawed, they got rid of outdoor advertising in the city. So Boulder doesn't have outdoor advertising. It's one of the reasons why you drive around and you're like, this is nice. What is this so nice about?
Okay,
Vermont's the same way. You're in Vermont and you're like, I really like Vermont. And it takes a while to realize, oh, they don't have outdoor.
I was doing that as I was driving my rental car through town and thinking that, but I didn't realize, now that you mentioned it.
There's no billboards.
No billboards.
So in Sao Paulo, they changed the ordinances, took down all the outdoor advertising, and the industry actually supported it. So the advertising industry supported it and gained a lot of favor and goodwill with the community through that effort. And I think, you know, advertising to kids is another place where we could do that as an industry.
And I think you
probably do a lot of kids advertising.
No, we don't. But I'm just thinking, you said twice as an industry, and I think like so many other things, it's going to happen agency by agency. The ones that are doing what they're doing and have no conscience, I don't think are going to grow a conscience unless they think it'll add to that bottom line. So I think you're going to see agencies that are...
Well, that already happens.
...creating their foundation on, I'm not going to take, you know, I'm not going to advertise the kids. But if I'm advertising from a certain perspective where I'm creating products that have better truths surrounding them, then I think the child advertising port will almost be moot.
I think everybody in advertising decides what they'll work on and what they won't work on as they come into the industry, right? Did you?
Yeah, and, you know, it's absolutely. I always say I don't want to get behind a product I would never use myself or I don't believe in.
Right.
You know, there's some decisions you make when things are
you know, and you're growing an agency and things are difficult, that you're just like, let's just do that, you know. And those, I don't relish those decisions.
You compromise your values.
Yeah, you compromise, and it's not a good day when that happens. So,
yeah.
You know, we move beyond that, and we've grown beyond that. You know, we don't make those decisions anymore.
Yeah.
But I see a lot of small, struggling agencies that do, you know, and even the way they may pitch against us may be a slightly not wholly on the up-and-up manner, and I say, well, then it's fine. If they make that decision, if the client says that's a right fit, then it wasn't for us anyway.
Yeah.
So it comes up, and it's a challenge. You know?
Yeah.
It's an
agency, and then your values may shift. You know, I never had to violate any of my values as I, you know, grew the agency. But towards the end, my values are kind of like going a different way. And you don't really feel like you're in the position to just resign accounts because of one person's values when you've got over 1,000 people working there. And so, you know,
that's a tough position.
It is. It's not great.
You had a great quote. I don't know. It was quoted. No, whether it was a quote about, you know.
Great misquote.
The moment you thought your mouth was disconnected from your soul as you answered a question about the obesity epidemic.
Right.
And,
right.
Now that's one of your main focuses is
food
and diabetes and how they process food and no one's accountable right now.
Yeah, well, I as a designer, I'm very into systems, right? So I'm interested in systems, and I like designing systems, and you know, small systems, and I am curious about how systems work, and so I wrote this 9-inch diet book a few years ago, 2 or 3 years ago.
You had a little rumble,
and it surprised me actually.
Really?
Yeah, I think I'm ignorant in a lot of ways, but
of course, everyone accused you of just doing it as a
I really did. I really didn't, but you know, I said to my wife, what the hell, like, I didn't see this coming, because I had worked, and basically it was like, you can't write that diet book if you work on Burger King, and I had worked on Burger King for years, and we had never had a meeting about how we wanted people to eat too much, like it had never come up. So I thought, why is portion control inconsistent? And I can understand the argument. I don't think it comes absolutely out of the blue, but I didn't think that you could take the 9-inch pot diet and you could use food that you could get at McDonald's and Burger King and elsewhere, right? Because it was pure portion and calorie, you know, less calories. Now, since that time, I actually have gotten more interested in the what's in our food, right? So when I wrote that, it was really like, hey, just cut down on your portions, you'll be fine, right? But I hadn't really thought much about genetically modified food or what impact that might have. I hadn't really thought much about high fructose corn sweetener and breaking down corn into unfamiliar elements. I hadn't really thought much about GMO and childhood allergies, and so thinking more about those things, that pulled my values into a place where it was definitely difficult to work on some of the stuff I was working on. But I don't think that anyone is to blame in a system. So blame is a really destructive aspect of our culture if we really want to get to solutions. Because blame removes you from responsibility. So when I think about...
So much energy spent on figuring out the blame.
But it also removes you. So systems work like this.
That's it for part 3 with Alex Boguski at the Fearless Cottage on the Buzz Bubble. Tune in next week for part 4.